Aber wir sollten ihn nicht länger warten lassen. Professor Boyle, finally, you're on. We know that you have been described in Wikipedia as a human rights attorney and as an international law professor at the Illinois College of Law. Can you give us a little more background?
Well, thank you. First of all, the Wikipedia entry was started by a disgruntled student of mine who set out to trash me, and they published it anyway. So
that's why. That's why it's also saying that you're a conspiracy theorist, right?
Right. So I wouldn't rely on anything Wikipedia says, and indeed, I tell my law students, don't cite Wikipedia to me in any papers you do for me, and when you go to court, don't cite Wikipedia because it's completely unreliable. Well, let me give you my background working on against biological weapons. In 1983, the Council for Responsible Genetics was founded in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Harvard and MIT are located. And they had some of the top life scientists in the world at that time, Harvard, MIT, et cetera. So soon after that, they asked me to handle their work against biological weapons. At that time, they had two programs up front. One was opposing genetically modified food, and then the other was against biological weapons. I did not get involved in the anti-GMO work, although I did certainly follow it. And I guess what happened, you see, I have two doctorates from Harvard in law and political science. I spent 7 years there, spent 2 years teaching undergraduates at Harvard before I decided to become a law professor here. And I had friends there in the Harvard Life Science Department. People at Harvard knew who I was. So they asked me to get involved. I think it was Professor John King who founded the council, and he was a he still is a professor of microbiology at the MIT and runs their electron microscope lab. So I said I would. I got involved, and it turned out that the Reagan administration, under its neoconservatives, got involved in the research, development, and testing of biological weapons by means of DNA genetic engineering, which, of course, I opposed and they opposed the council. So the council convened a briefing on Capitol Hill in for Congress in 1985, Washington, D.C., and asked me to brief Congress on all this and what was wrong with it. It clearly violated the Biological Weapons Convention. And then I issued a public plea that we really needed U.S. domestic implementing legislation for the Biological Weapons Convention to make any research, development, testing, stockpile of any type of biological weapons criminal, not just illegal, but criminal. So the committee then asked me to draft this legislation, which I did. And you can see the preliminary work I did on all this. It's in my book, The Future of International Law and American Foreign Policy. It's now out of print, but you could get it on eBay or something like that. I have all these preliminary documents in there. So my Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989, and I won't go through the whole history here of trying to get that through Congress. That was passed unanimously by both houses of the United States Congress in 1989 and signed into law by President George Bush Sr. So I continued to work against biological weapons since there. Since then, my legislation provided for life imprisonment for anyone involved in research, development, testing of biological weapons. and in particular the abuse of DNA genetic engineering biological weapons. And I also, I guess you would say, somewhat prophetically anticipated synthetic biology, because that's in there too. I drafted, I thought the, piece of legislation with no loopholes at all. So since those days, I've been involved actively in opposing U.S. government biological warfare programs. I think I sent you, I published a book, Biowarfare and Terrorism. Mm-hmm. You can get it at Amazon or something, with a foreword by Professor King of MIT, mm-hmm. sort of like having a Catholic cardinal providing a nihil obstat and a imprimatur to my book. But, this is a microbiology professor at MIT endorsing everything I'm saying here. This book...
Can I quickly translate this so that we can then delve into the details, just to tell our viewers what you just told us about your involvement in this legislation, because I think that is the basis for everything.
Yeah, you have my permission to use these materials however you want.
Okay, just one second. Also, hat eben noch mal erklärt, was sein eigentlicher Hintergrund ist. Professor Boyle ist schon 1983 mit diesem biologischen Waffenprogramm in Kontakt gekommen. Damals gab es auch eine Bewegung, die sich gegen genetisch verändertes Essen, Lebensmittel wandte. Aber sein Interesse hat immer den biologischen Waffen gegolten. Und er hat jetzt gerade noch geschildert, dass er zwei Doktorgrade hat. Einmal, das muss ich mal wiederfinden hier, einmal den des Rechts und einmal politische Wissenschaften aus Harvard. Und seit 1985 ist er dabei, Kontrolle zu propagieren über die biologischen Waffen. Hier hat er jetzt erklärt, dass es ihm dann in 1989 gelungen ist, ein Gesetz durch beide Häuser des Kongresses zu bringen, also sowohl den Senat als auch das House of Representatives. Die haben beide einstimmig, hat er eben gesagt, seinem Gesetz zugestimmt, wonach diese biologischen Waffen praktisch verbannt wurden. Und zwar sagt er, es sieht dieses Gesetz sogar lebenslängliches Gefängnis vor für Menschen, die sich an der Forschung, an dem Test und an den DNA-genetischen Experimenten beteiligen. Okay, I got that straight, I think. That is what probably still keeps you up at night, in particular now with the coronavirus, right?
Right, well, this book went to press in 2005, and I just said, the United States government is involved in research, development, testing of a biological warfare, offensive biological warfare race, mm-hmm. And reconstructing a offensive biological warfare industry that it had before the Biological Weapons Convention. It's all back, only in spades. So this book came out in 2005, and then there is a documentary that came out in 2009. These are sources for research if you want to research them. It's called Anthrax War, mm-hmm. by Cohen, C-O-E-N, and Nadler. You can find it on the internet. And I served as a consultant to them and appear in the documentary. And I said all this work at these biosafety level lab 3 and 4s, I said, this is a catastrophe waiting to happen. And then I sent you the article by my friend Sherwood Ross, 2015, entitled 13,000 U.S. Death Scientists Hard at Work that updates this this book as of 2015. And I just said in there, this is a biocatastrophe waiting to happen. So, of course, I've opposed these weapons. I've done, you know, everything I can to expose the existential dangers here. You have the document I sent you where the Council for Responsible Genetics and I called for an end to this type of work right after the anthrax attacks of October 2001. I was the first to point out publicly that this obviously, this was in the first week of November, November 1, 2001. I sent you that at a conference at Harvard Divinity School workshop. They asked me to chair the Council for Responsible Genetics against U.S. biological warfare programs. And I just said, this is clearly, this anthrax came out of a United States government lab and warfare program. Later, that was proven, although they're still covering up precisely what happened there. Mm-hmm. So I continued with this work and monitoring all suspicious outbreaks of disease around the world, trying to decide, well, is this natural or was it deliberate? Was it a leak? What was going on here? I was down in Nicaragua in 1985 trying to help them when they all of a sudden out of nowhere, they were hit with mosquitoes giving them hemorrhagic dengue fever. And it seemed to me the CIA had done the exact same thing to Cuba. So I did work with the Nicaraguan government on that and explained to them how to research all this, put it together, and file a complaint under the Biological Weapons Convention with the UN Security Council against the United States government, which they did. Of course, the U.S. made sure nothing came of that. So I won't go through all this work I've been doing since 1983. It's in these two books and then that documentary interview and then the Sherwood Ross. But to make a long story short, and that Sherwood Ross pretty much brings everything up to date until the COVID-19. Now, what happened on COVID-19, I was on leave, sabbatical leave, to write a book in the fall of 2019. So I wasn't doing my usual duties of keeping up on suspicious outbreaks of disease. But when I came back for the new semester, it was the mid-January, I read about this suspicious outbreak of pneumonia-like illness in Wuhan. I said, well, you know, the Chinese have, and by the way, then the U.S. government set off an offensive biological warfare arms race again with other major powers. Britain is involved, as far as I can figure out. France is involved, Israel, Russia, China, other states. So basically, the Biological Weapons Convention has become a dead letter. Or as the German foreign minister said at the start of the First World War, a mere scrap of paper. Remember that, the treaty guaranteeing the neutrality of Belgium. It's a mere scrap of paper. Well, regretfully, it is, although my legislation is still on the books. So I did not have a chance to research it immediately because I was starting teaching. But the morning, Friday morning of January 24, I did research it and concluded that COVID-19, well, what was later called COVID-19, had leaked out of the Wuhan BSL-4 and that it was an offensive biological warfare weapon that had gain of function activities. And it was existentially dangerous. So I put a worldwide alert out there on the internet. I have many internet sources here given to me by my friend Sherwood Ross, who ran a public relations agency. He's now retired, so okay. But he gave me all his notice. So it went out, and I gave an interview later that day to Geopolitics and Empire, just saying, well, this is obviously a offensive biological warfare weapon. It leaked out of that Wuhan BSL-4, and it has gain-of-function properties. It's existentially dangerous, and we need to shut down all these BSL-3s and BSL-4s. They're just too dangerous. So that interview went viral all over the world, and I've been inundated with requests for interviews and this, that, and the other thing since then. But I did send you the scholarly paper I gave at that conference in India. Mm-hmm. I think I sent it to you. I asked you to distribute everyone, and that really summarizes my analysis of COVID-19. It is an offensive biological warfare weapon. It has gain-of-function activities that makes it more lethal and more infectious. It has HIV, the precursor to AIDS, DNA genetically engineered right in there. And it also appears to have been aerosolized by means of nanotechnology, which is why it can travel up to 27 feet. It travels in the air, on the air, above the air, with the air. So it's extremely dangerous. This notion that it came out of the wet market is just, you know, that's communist propaganda. I don't know why anyone, you know, President Xi, I'm not anti-communist. I'm not a China basher or anything. Indeed, I invited to lecture in China in the first 2 weeks in January 2019, just before my classes began and after Christmas. But I was told it was canceled because of President Xi's crackdown on foreign influence. And I guess I'm a running dog capitalist rotor from Harvard Law School or something like that, Temple of Capitalism, along with Harvard Business School.
Let me briefly interject, because we need to translate this again.
Sure, go ahead.
Soll ich's machen oder du? Okay. Ja, also nachdem klar gemacht worden ist, dass Professor Boyle eine große Nummer ist, weil er damals in 1989 dieses Gesetz zum Bann letzten Endes, zum Verbot von Experimenten und Testen von biologischen Waffen durchgesetzt hat, hat er das Ganze, diese Aktivitäten, die es trotzdem gab, obwohl sie illegal waren, weiter beobachtet. 2005 ist ihm was aufgefallen. Da gab es plötzlich ein Rennen um biologische Waffen. Das begann da offenbar. Im Oktober 2001 hat er vorher diesen Antragsvorfall, an den sich manche von Ihnen vielleicht erinnern. Da war kurz vorher 9/11. Und dann gab es auf zwei Politiker Angriffe mit Antrax. Diese beiden Politiker waren bis dahin skeptisch in eine Richtung. Plötzlich waren sie es nicht mehr. Es besteht der Verdacht, dass die damit schlichtweg unter Druck gesetzt werden sollten. Jedenfalls sagt Professor Boyle, dass er Erkenntnisse darüber hat, dass dieses Antrax damals aus amerikanischen Laboren gekommen ist. Er hat jedenfalls immer weiter seit dieser Zeit, weil er offenbar seiner eigenen Regierung nicht so richtig vertraut hat, alle verdächtigen Ausbrüche von irgendwelchen Krankheiten beobachtet. 1987 vorher schon gab es irgendeine Moskito-Geschichte, die zu seltsamen Hemorrhaging Fieber geführt hat in Nicaragua. Da hat er die Regierung beraten. Die hat er dahingehend beraten, dass er wohl Informationen gegeben hat, dass das aus den USA kam. Das hat zwar zu nichts geführt, aber Versuche gab es. So, jetzt sind wir im September, fast forward, im September 2019, da hat er gerade ein Sabbatical gemacht, hat gerade nicht gelehrt, sondern wollte ein Buch schreiben und war deshalb so ein bisschen aus dem Geschehen heraus. Aufgefallen ist ihm dann Mitte Januar 2020. Im Kopf müssen wir immer haben, dass nach seiner Darstellung hier inzwischen ein biologisches Waffenrennen zwischen den USA, Russland, China, Frankreich, England und wohl noch anderen Staaten begonnen hat. Jedenfalls, er war die ganze Zeit wachsam und im Januar 2020, am 24. Januar 2020, hat er von dem Vorfall erfahren, dass angeblich aus einem biologischen Labor mit dem Sicherheitslevel 4, das ist das höchste Sicherheitslevel, ein Leak geschehen ist, dass da ein Virus entkommen ist. Und zwar soll es da Experimente gegeben haben, die heißen Gain-of-Function-Experimente. Da bringt man Viren bei, so krank das klingt, das ist so, da bringt man Viren bei, wie sie zum Beispiel vom Tier auf den Menschen überspringen können. Da muss was schiefgegangen sein, sagt er. Und er sagt, er hat dann ein Interview gegeben, das viral gegangen ist und hat erläutert, dass nach seiner Auffassung hier dass das Ganze nicht wie dargestellt worden ist, von einem Tiermarkt, Fischmarkt entsprungen ist, das Virus da also rausgekommen ist, sondern dass es vielmehr so war, dass dass aus dem Level 4, aus dem Sicherheitsstandard 4, wie gesagt, der höchste Sicherheitsstandard, aus einem Labor in Wuhan, wo diese Gain-of-Function-Experimente durchgeführt wurden, ein Virus entkommen ist und dass da größte Gefahr herrscht. Er hat auch weiter gesagt, dass hier die Gefahr dieses Virus auch darin besteht, dass da noch ein HIV-Anteil mit eingebaut worden ist und dass dieses Virus sehr weit nicht nur durch diese Aerosols, fliegen kann, sondern sogar noch weiter als bisher gedacht, 27 Fuß, das sind so 8 Meter etwa, die das Ganze zurücklegen kann. So that's I just explained that according to your observations, and I'm pretty sure you have some concrete evidence, but according to your observations that this has nothing to do with a wet market in China and Wuhan, but rather this is a leak from a level 4 biolab in Wuhan where they conducted gain of function experiments. Who were these people? I have, in the meantime, from people like David Martin, for example, I have gotten information that some of the people who are involved include Fauci, for example, and also...
Yes, that paper I sent you, mm-hmm. by email, I gave you a little packet of material mm-hmm. in that email. Summarizing, this was the lecture I gave at the Maharashtra Peace University in India mm-hmm. in June. Mm-hmm. It's a scholarly conference. I gave the keynote address, and in that paper, I try to summarize everything up as best as possible. Okay. And since then, everything I've said has been confirmed, repeated, whatever. Mm-hmm. And if you want, I've given many interviews you can find on Google since January 24, 2020, reviewing the scholarly evidence, including several on InfoWars, where they put the articles I was referring to online. Mm-hmm. With the citations and all that. So you can have a look at that, too, if you want to. Yes. Let me continue.
Yeah, okay.
The critical article was SARS-like cluster circulating bat coronavirus pose threat for human emergence. And I analyzed this in great detail in what you can... You can find on the internet under my name, if they haven't removed it yet, as a smoking gun interview, Francis Boyle. And it turns out that what was involved here was Ms. Xi there from the Wuhan BSL-4, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, the Food and Drug Administration of the United States, the Harvard Medical School, also Fauci and the NIH funded it. Regretfully, my alma mater, Harvard, was a sponsoring institution there at the Wuhan BSL-4, as well as the WHO. So they're all implicated in this. You have to understand, the Wuhan BSL-4 is China's Fort Detrick. It's their first Fort Detrick. And they tried to do there all the research, development, testing of illegal and criminal biological warfare weapons that they do at Fort Detrick. And the test is, of course, aerosolization. There is no legitimate scientific or medical reason for aerosolization like at Fort Detrick or Wuhan BSL-4. Aerosolization is good only for delivering biological warfare agents by air, because we humans breathe air. And whenever you find an aerosolization program like at Fort Detrick or Wuhan BSL-4, you know for sure it's a biological warfare laboratory. And indeed, on the maybe they've taken it down now, but the Wuhan BSL-4 bragged on their webpage that they had aerosolized viruses. So it's clear that's what this is. And I summarized the evidence there in that lecture I gave in India. It's a brief synopsis, 30 minutes long. Now, let me get into the vaccines. I call them Frankenshots. These really aren't vaccines. Since I did, you know, I follow the work the Council for Responsible Genetics did on GMO food. As you know, that was called Frankenfood, and that's pretty much barred over there in Europe. But here in the United States, we have to eat this stuff. So I just call them Frankenshots. Now, if you have a look at my Indian lecture at the end of June, what I said there was that I don't think, you know, since it has HIV, DNA genetically engineered right into it, which the French Nobel Prize winner in biology, Montagnier, has agreed with me on, we don't have a vaccine for HIV. We've tried for the last 20 years, 30 years to get one. We still don't have one. So, of course, there's not going to be a safe and effective vaccine. And what I said here was, quote, and even if Big Pharma says it has developed a vaccine for COVID-19, it will probably be more dangerous than useless. Now, I've said that based on my knowledge of biological warfare vaccines. I am not part of the anti-vax movement. I'm sort of agnostic, you know, Robert Kennedy, fine. You know, I've followed what they've done, but I've never been a part of that. But I am an expert on biological warfare vaccines. And that goes back to my defense of Captain Dr. Yolanda Hewitt Vaughn, who was the highest ranking military officer to refuse to serve in the Bush Senior Gulf War I of 1991, 30 years ago at this time. And one of the reasons she refused was that she was not going to administer experimental anti-biological warfare vaccines for anthrax and botulin in violation of the Nuremberg Code on Medical Experimentation and the Helsinki Declaration and her oath as a doctor to do no harm, the Hippocratic Oath. So she did this in December and refused to go December 1990, if I remember. I'm at home now because we're locked out of the law school over the pandemic. I don't have all my notes or things. This is all off the top of my head. They court-martialed her for desertion. She didn't desert. It was ridiculous. But they wanted to make a martyr out of her. So I was asked to get involved in her defense in February of 1991. And one of the critical issues, of course, was the Nuremberg Code, which I also sent you my interview on, vaccines were clearly experimental. They hadn't been approved for anyone. And as a matter of fact, the FDA gave them an emergency use approval. They had no authority to waive the Nuremberg Code on medical experimentation. You're there in Germany. You know all about the Nuremberg Code on medical experimentation and the medical doctor's case, right? So fine. I helped defend her. I went down to Fort Leonard Wood for Article 32 hearing and, you know, argued that they clearly violated the Nuremberg Code on medical experimentation. They were an international crime. And of course, she had a right not to give them. And then I went back for her court-martial in August, formal court-martial Fort Leonard Wood in August of 1991. It was a kangaroo court and a show trial. I got up on the stand, I answered one question, and they threw me off the witness stand for my argument. But we had two satellite cameras there. And the actress, Margot Kidder, who played Lois Lane, was there supporting her. So Margot and I agreed that she would go out and get all of the media around her, and then she would introduce the media to me, and I'd run the press conference. And I said a lot of things in the press conference. I won't go through it all here. But what I did say was that clearly Bush Senior, Cheney, the Secretary of Defense, Powell, Joint Chiefs of Staff, Schwarzkopf, committed a Nuremberg crime on our own troops. That went out nationwide. Everyone heard that. It even made it to the White House. I was told by a lawyer there, they all heard it and they were very upset. Well, later, Senator Jay Rockefeller also held hearings on these shots, and he reached the same conclusion in an official report. All these citations are in there. To make a long story short, I eventually got Captain Dr. Hewitt Vaughn out of, I got her adopted a prisoner of conscience by Amnesty International and out of Leavenworth after 8 months. She shouldn't have been there. She was facing 5 years, 8 months, okay. So then I moved on to other matters. Well, a year later, I was contacted by the independent television network in Britain, TV4. It's a rival to the BBC, but not run by the government. And they were working on a very serious human rights problem. It turned out that large numbers of British soldiers who became sick serving in Gulf War I had developed some very strange neurological problems. And their lawyers were alleging that it was a result of the shots. The British troops also took the same shots. The French troops did not. They did not come down with Gulf War syndrome, which tells you the shots were responsible. The French had been burned before in their Indochina wars when they were in Vietnam with an experimental anthrax shot, made everyone sick. So they didn't take them and they didn't come down with the Gulf War syndrome, but the American and the British troops did. So I worked on this documentary that came out called The Dirty War. And I also appeared in it. I was arguing for Bosnia in the World Court in the summer of 1993. And they sent a camera crew over there to interview me. The British government was denying there was anything like the Gulf War syndrome or the shots had anything to do with it, et cetera. So this documentary came out, I think, in March of 1994, front page headlines all over Britain. And finally, the British Ministry of Defense admitted, yes, there is such a thing as the Gulf War syndrome. So as a result of this, I realized that, you know, Dr. Hewitt Vaughan was a prophet, right? She knew this was going to happen. And also then, we had a very serious problem on our hands here in the United States with the Gulf War syndrome. It turns out, the last time I've looked at the figures, and this was a while ago, out of 500, and these are all approximate figures, because the Pentagon lies about the whole thing, because they knew they committed a Nuremberg crime against their own troops. So of course they lie. And they told these troops, it's all in your head. The figures were, out of 500,000 U.S. troops inoculated with these Franken-shots, two of them, 11,000 died and 100,000 were disabled. And those were healthy young men and women in U.S. armed forces. So you can extrapolate from there what's going to happen with these COVID-19 Franken-shots.
I have to translate this.
The gross, you know, this COVID-19, you know, this is SARS on steroids, and these shots, whatever you want to call them, I'm afraid that this is what we are facing. It will probably be worse than this. But I would say that's a floor, not the ceiling. Mm-hmm. But it took about, I would say, 2 years for the full dimensions of that humanitarian catastrophe to become public. I, following these things, was not aware. I knew Hewitt Vaughan was right, but we made no predictions, right? She was a prophet. She was right. She was courageous. But we did not get into realizing the that we had a humanitarian catastrophe on our hands for maybe 2 years after they were administered.
Professor Boyle, how soon after the vaccinations happened, how soon was it possible to see this outcome? You're saying that out of 500,000 people, soldiers who were vaccinated, 11,000 died and 100,000 are disabled. How long did it take for this result to become obvious?
Well, it became obvious over time because the Pentagon was lying and covering up every step of the way, mm-hmm. because they knew they had heard me say and accuse them of committing mm-hmm. a Nuremberg crime against their own troops. Mm-hmm. So it was an evolving situation over time that we realized eventually they had created the Franken-shots, the two original, had created a humanitarian catastrophe. Mm-hmm. As I said, it first came to my attention when TV4 contacted me and said that large numbers of British troops were suffering from this Gulf War syndrome that the British Ministry of Defense denied. But the French troops, I found out, were not, and they did not take these shots.
When was the interview? When did you give this interview on TV4?
Well, I began advising them on it. They asked me to serve as a consultant on them as an expert, which I did. I would say it was the spring, maybe early spring or so of 1993.
Okay.
Then the interview, I distinctly remember because I was arguing for the Bosnians in the World Court. I think mm-hmm. it was August of 1993.
Okay.
And they sent that camera crew to interview me in the Hague.
Now this is now we're at the heart of the matter, so to speak. I just want to give me a chance to shock our audience by translating this.
Well, I'm not. Please understand, I'm not trying to shock anyone.
I realize that. I know that.
I'm trying to give you the facts as I see them.
Yeah.
So that we can come to grips.
Yeah.
With what's going on here, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And I mean no disrespect to Prime Minister Merkel. But I have been following the situation over there in Germany. I don't think the German people have been told the truth here, what's going on.
We neither. Also, das ist jetzt wichtig, weil jetzt kommen wir ins Herz der ganzen Geschichte. Er sagt, dass dieses biologische Waffenexperiment, was in Wuhan passiert ist, auch unter Mitwirkung der Amerikaner passiert ist. Also Fauci hatte da was mit zu tun. Es sind aber auch namhafte Universitäten involviert, nämlich die University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill war das, das Food and Drug Administration, Harvard, seine alte Alma Mater war da beteiligt, das NIH, das National Institute of Health, die Weltgesundheitsorganisation natürlich. Und das Ganze war ein Level 4, also höchste Sicherheitsstufe Labor, sagt er. So sicher wie Fort Detrick, also das absolut sicherste, was man sich überhaupt nur vorstellen kann. Die Tatsache, dass hier diese Mischung oder ich weiß gar nicht, wie man es sagen soll, Beimischung von HIV-Viren passiert sind und diese, er sagt, diese Aerosolization, also die Tatsache, dass man versucht hat, das Ganze durch, so sagt er in der Forschung, durch diese Aerosolisierung voranzutreiben, würde immer dafür sprechen, dass es hier nicht um Forschung zugunsten von Impfstoffen geht, sondern um militärische Einsatzmöglichkeiten. Jetzt kommt der, gibt er noch ein bisschen mehr Hintergrund, um uns zu erklären, warum er nun glaubt, dass wir hier ein besonders gefährliches Problem haben, was überhaupt erst durch die Impfungen entstanden ist. Er hat 1991 eine Militärärztin vertreten, die sich weigerte, die also, wie würden wir das sagen, eine Gewissensentscheidung getroffen hat, gesagt hat, ich mache nicht mit im ersten Golfkrieg. In diesem ersten Golfkrieg hat sie nicht mitgemacht, weil die Soldaten damals geimpft wurden mit Impfstoffen, von denen keiner so genau wusste, was es ist. Und sie hat gesagt, das ist hochgefährlich, das ist hier ein Nürnberger Experiment, das ist verboten gemäß dem Nürnberger Kodex und ich mache da nicht mit. Sie befürchtete Allerschlimmstes. Die Impfungen wurden trotzdem durchgezogen. Er hat die Frau dann verteidigt. Am Ende ist sie aus Fort Leavenworth, das ist so eins der schlimmsten Militärgefängnisse, wieder rausgekommen. Aber immerhin ist sie Monate drin gewesen. Die Impfungen wurden durchgeführt. Und am Ende, so sagt er, hat sich bewahrheitet, was sie quasi, diese Ärztin, diese Militärärztin quasi prophetisch schon angekündigt hat. Und zwar ist das dieses Golfkriegs, Syndrom, was inzwischen Furore gemacht hat. Geimpft wurden die Amerikaner und die Engländer, aber nicht die Franzosen. Folgendes ist passiert. Er wurde von TV4, das ist so eine Art unabhängiges Medium im Verhältnis zum Staatsmedium BBC in England, gebeten, ein Interview zu geben. Vorher ist er schon Sachverständiger gewesen. Und im Rahmen dieses Interviews hat er dann erläutern können, was es nach seiner Auffassung und aufgrund der Forschung, die inzwischen betrieben worden war, mit diesem Golfkriegssyndrom auf sich hatte. Es war nämlich so, dass ich glaube, nach 2 Jahren nach der Impfung war das offensichtlich, er sagte es aber über eine Zeit lang immer offensichtlicher geworden. Von 500.000 amerikanischen Soldaten, die geimpft worden waren, waren in der Zwischenzeit 11.000 gestorben und 100.000 schwer behindert. Dasselbe in ähnlicher Weise war in England passiert. Deswegen sollte er da in England als Gutachter unterwegs sein und hat dann auch dieses Interview gegeben. Diejenigen, die nicht geimpft wurden, weil sie nämlich vorgewarnt waren, waren die Franzosen. Die kannten diese Probleme mit solchen merkwürdigen Impfstoffen, die nicht wirklich getestet worden waren, schon aus dem Vietnamkrieg, dem Indochina-Krieg. Und die hatten auch nichts. Dieses Golfkriegssyndrom tauchte also nur bei den Amerikanern und in gleicher Weise bei den Engländern auf. Und vor diesem Hintergrund, sagt er, befürchtet er das Allerschlimmste, mittel- und langfristig aufgrund dieser, er nennt die Frankenshots, also Frankenstein-Impfungen, Injektionen, die jetzt wegen des wegen dieser angeblichen Covid-Erkrankung verabreicht wurden. So you probably on the basis of what you learned through the developments of the Gulf War syndrome, you expect the worst because you're saying this has nothing to do with any virus of any kind. But we're now going to have problems because of the Frankenshots, because of the vaccinations.
Well, let me continue then with my analysis. Yes, mm-hmm. that based on what happened with the Gulf War Frankenshots, I believe that those figures I gave you, 500,000 inoculated, 11,000 dead, 100,000 disabled, are a floor of what we can expect here with these shots coming up, Frankenshots, probably over the next year or two. As you know, we're already getting reports of large numbers of adverse reactions all over the world to these things. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a floor based on my experience having dealt with this issue before. But that was as, you know, Captain Yolanda Hewitt-Vaughan's lawyer, and she was the prophet. She was the one with courage there, spent 8 months in Fort Leavenworth because of her heroic opposition to those shots, and she was right. Now, as for the vaccines we're seeing here, Frankenshots, you have the two types, the Pfizer, BioNTech, some BioNTech people over there in Germany, but funded by Bill Gates, and then the Moderna. Both of those are based on giving people messenger RNA, which is extremely powerful and dangerous. It's basically reworking your entire genetic composition. We have absolutely no idea, none. This has never been done before. There has never been any type of so-called vaccine using this type of technology before. In addition, this technology goes back to the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. Let me repeat that. It is from the Pentagon that has developed this technology, the Defense Advanced Research Program, DARPA. They were the ones who funded this technology as part of their offensive biological warfare program to have a useful biological weapon for biological warfare purposes. You first have to develop the biological warfare agent itself, COVID-19. And then you at least have to try to develop a vaccine for it in case of a blowback. You understand blowback in German there, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And so that always happens to the very dawn of DNA genetic engineering for biological warfare purposes, where I came in 1983, starting under Reagan. They would first develop the weapon, and then they would develop the vaccine using reverse engineering for the vaccine. And the documents show right here, DARPA awards Moderna Therapeutics a grant for up to $25 million to develop messenger RNA therapeutics. Mm-hmm. Right there from the Moderna website.
Okay, I have to translate this. Also, sure. Sagt die... Das Ganze scheint aus seiner Sicht ein biologisches Waffenprogramm zu sein, was vom Pentagon entwickelt worden ist. DARPA, das ist so eine biologische Waffenkriegseinheit. Ich will es jetzt nicht im Einzelnen darstellen, das kann man alles nachlesen. DARPA ist das. Und er sagt, das ist so, dass dieses Programm, was er eigentlich schon seit 85, als er sich das erste Mal mit diesen Biowaffen beschäftigt hat, gesehen hat, dass das typischerweise immer so abläuft, dass zuerst die biologische Waffe entwickelt wird und dann für den Fall, dass es da irgendwelche Gefahren gibt, ein Blowback gibt, wie er gesagt hat, so wie jetzt dieser Leak, für den Fall, dass man da was gegen tun muss, wird ein Impfstoff entwickelt. Und der Impfstoff, um den es hier geht, der ja keiner ist, wie wir inzwischen wissen, hat er eben auch nochmal betont, mRNA-Impfstoff, der kommt aus diesem DARPA-Programm des Pentagon. Und soll, niemand weiß genau, wie er wirkt. Das haben wir ja von allen Experten gehört, die wir dazu befragt haben. Wolfgang Bodak hat eben auch noch mal darauf hingewiesen, dass wir weder wissen, wie effizient er ist, also nach seiner Einschätzung unter 1% im Gegensatz zu den Behauptungen von 97%, aber erst recht wissen wir nicht, wie gefährlich es ist. Und das hat er eben auch noch mal bestätigt. Niemand weiß, wie gefährlich das ist, was hier in den nächsten Jahren zu erwarten ist. Er hat aber darauf hingewiesen, dass basierend auf den Erfahrungen mit diesem Gulf War Syndrome, er davon ausgeht, dass das, was da passiert ist, also von 500.000 Menschen, die geimpft wurden, sind 11.000 gestorben und 100.000 schwerbehindert, dass er glaubt, das ist die Unterkante. Das hier würde in den nächsten 1 bis 2 Jahren wahrscheinlich sehr, sehr viel schlimmer werden als das, was damals erlebt worden ist. Okay, I just concluded with...
Can I ask you something?
Look, but could I finish with the other vaccines and then I'll take questions. Is that all right?
Yeah, because we're gonna have to wrap up because we're running out of time. But of course, go ahead, please.
Let me finish with the other vaccines.
Yeah.
I don't mean any disrespect, man.
It's all right.
There are now 2 other vaccines out there, AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, and let me comment on them. Now, at one point, now they're like, you know, this is pigs feeding from a trough trying to develop these vaccines. At one point, they did have an analysis of about 14 or 15 vaccines here in the United States I took a look at. Certainly, all of them but one, I'll discuss that in a minute, AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, these Frankenshots actually give you live cells from COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So they actually give you live cells from an offensive biological warfare weapon that has gain-of-function properties and has HIV that is DNA genetically engineered into it. Moreover, we know from the study I mentioned here, SARS-like cluster, Fort Detrick gave cells to the University of North Carolina to which the Bat Queen took back with her all of this technology to China. So as for AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, it looks like Sputnik vaccine that Putin still won't take because I think his biowarfare people advised him not to. All of them, except one that says they, if you believe them, that they use dead cells, will give you COVID-19.
That explains a lot.
The cells for COVID-19, an offensive biological warfare weapon, gain of function properties, and HIV DNA genetically engineered in there. My conclusion is I don't think anyone should be taking any of these Frankenshots. They're just too dangerous. And by the way, you will note the drastic measures President Putin has taken to protect himself in Russia. We've read about them here in the United States. No one meets with Putin unless they've been quarantined for at least 2 weeks, and then they have to go through some type of chemical, biological decontamination process. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that President Putin, who's a KGB guy, mm-hmm. has been advised by his own biological warfare experts, and they make biological warfare weapons there. We know that for a fact, that this is an extremely dangerous offensive biological warfare weapon, and he has to take drastic security measures here to protect himself from it. And of course, he hasn't taken even his own shot. I'm sure that's all on the advice of his own biological warfare experts. So my conclusion is that any of these vaccines will be more dangerous than worthless. I don't think we're ever going to have a vaccine that is safe and effective for this. It's going to be like HIV or cancer. We don't have a vaccine for cancer. We've tried for a generation to get a vaccine for cancer. I think, however, that with drugs and therapeutics, we can bring this under control like we have HIV and like we have cancer.
Okay.
I regret to say, I think that's the best we can do for now. I wish, you know, there was a magic bullet there, but from my assessment of the situation, I don't believe there is. Ma'am, your question. Oh, did you want to translate that?
Yeah, let me first translate it, because yeah, okay. This is the gist of the matter. Also, was jetzt gerade noch erklärt hat, ist, dass alle diese sogenannten Impfstoffe, also diese genetischen Experimente, mit einer einzigen Ausnahme, auch AstraZeneca und Johnson & Johnson hat er gerade erklärt, das sind Injektionen lebender Zellen mit diesem Virus selbst, mit dem Coronavirus selbst, mit den Gain-of-Function-Properties und mit dem DNA-mäßig eingespeisten HIV-Virus. Das alles entwickelt in dem Höchstsicherheitslabor in Wuhan, entsprechend dem Fort Detrick, das ist das Pendant dazu in den USA, da ist also auch das mit der höchsten Sicherheitsstufe 4 versehene Labor. Er sagt, das alles ist höchst gefährlich, wird nach seiner Einschätzung wesentlich größere Schäden in den nächsten 1 bis 2 Jahren verursachen, als es dieses Gulf War Syndrome verursacht hat. Er sagt, dass aus seiner Sicht, ach so, ja, und der russische Präsident Putin lässt sich noch nicht mal mit seinem eigenen Impfstoff, mit diesem Sputnik-Impfstoff impfen, weil er offenbar, so schätzt Francis Boyle das ein, von seinen Sicherheitsleuten gewarnt wird. Er hat extreme Sicherheitsmaßnahmen um sich herum, lässt kaum noch einen an sich heran, und wenn, dann müssen die alle irgendwie chemisch gereinigt werden. Da besteht also offenbar, wenn das so alles zutreffend ist, besteht in Russland zumindest bei den in Anführungsstrichen Eingeweihten großes Sicherheitsbedenken, um nicht zu sagen Panik. Und Francis Boyle sagt, er glaubt nicht, dass hier in irgendeiner Weise überhaupt ein Impfstoff in der Lage sein wird, das, was hier jetzt gerade ausgelöst worden ist, also die Leute werden dann auch alle Covid bekommen, wie er sagt, wahrscheinlich in einer schlimmeren Form als das, was wir jetzt bisher sehen können. Er glaubt nicht, dass es möglich sein wird, dagegen wieder was zu finden, sondern man wird sich damit zufrieden geben müssen, dass man das so behandeln muss, wie man eben auch HIV behandeln muss, gibt es ja auch keinen Impfstoff gegen, oder wie man eben Krebs behandeln muss, gibt es auch keinen Impfstoff geben. Besser wird es nicht gehen, sagt Professor Francis Boyle. Du wolltest noch eine Frage stellen.
So I have a question. So do you think, in your opinion...
You better speak closer to the microphone because of the internet connection, please.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, but you probably should bring it a little closer and speak
okay, so I just
more loudly.
It. So I was wondering if you...
I can hear that.
Okay,
yes.
Perfect. So in your opinion, do you think that the virus, you know, the manufactured, in your opinion, manufactured virus, that it itself is so dangerous? Or could it not maybe also be that the virus itself is not so dangerous, but it's being used in order to apply this vaccine, and that is the real danger, or the interaction of both of them? You know, because
I think it's both, ma'am. I think the virus itself, as I said before, is extremely dangerous, existentially dangerous. And then I believe the vaccines, yes, I would encourage all German people to go out and read that Nuremberg Code on Medical Experimentation. And you will see every one of these vaccines that they are trying to push on you violates the Nuremberg Code on Medical Experimentation that dealt with the Nazi doctors. And I don't mean this, you know, lightly or with any disrespect, but I think these are Nazi type shots. Yes.
Yeah,
I'm afraid so. So we're in a real dilemma here, you know, Scylla and Charybdis. But that you put the two together, as I've said in an interview, this is sort of a double whammy against the human race. I believe we're fighting World War III against COVID-19, mm-hmm. not against China. I'm not a China basher. I studied Chinese civilization with the late great Professor William Hardy McNeil at the University of Chicago, rival to Toynbee. So I have great respect for their civilization. But I believe I have to be honest in my assessment of what happened here. And thank heaven, this didn't happen somewhere else. My concern was going to happen here in the United States, Fort Detrick leaks, all these BSL-3s and BSL-4s leak. I think you've got them over there in Germany, too. Wasn't it the Koch Institute? They go back to the Nazis. I'm sure they're back at it again. I haven't researched them in great detail. I think it's both, man. It's both together. I would recommend against any of these vaccines, but don't take my word for it. Read that Nuremberg Code on medical experimentation. That is customary international criminal law today. It applies around the world. I sent you the notice I drafted to be used, a short little notice to be used by anyone who wants to refuse to take these shots or to administer them, and with an interview explaining it as best I could in, 20 minutes. So I wish I had a better solution, ma'am, except I think it's going to be up to the medical doctors to come up with therapeutics and drugs who actually treat patients that hopefully can bring this thing under control. That's my conclusion as of now.
Professor Boyle.
Ma'am, let me say this. People are throwing around this term great reset. That's too amorphous for me to deal with. Mm-hmm. Okay? I mean, that's a concept. I've tried to deal here with facts, mm-hmm. right, that you can then analyze and draw your own conclusions from. I'm not interested in getting into the rest of that. I'm just giving the facts as I see it, having worked against U.S. biological warfare weapons programs and other countries since 1983. That's mm-hmm. the way I see it.
Okay. I think Dr. Vodak may have a question because he's gesturing in the background. I think he wants to ask you something. Wolfgang?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Please speak up, though, because of the internet connection.
Yeah. Wolfgang?
Yeah, no, my microphone's on, yes. Yes, I have a question. May I do it in English so that we can immediately understand what I want to ask?
Right, I don't speak German, sorry.
Okay. So, you know, the viruses, they are millions of years old, and some of them are very successful. And if a virus wants to be successful, he has to pay attention not to kill his host. Otherwise, he cannot spread. So there is a self-regulation in the system. And we even know that those viruses who hurt us less, and nevertheless, they can go on and multiplying in our body, they are the most successful. They even get part of our genome, some of them. So this is a biological development we can observe in many, many kinds of viruses. So if somebody constructs a virus in a laboratory, makes some gain of function with a virus that may kill other people, maybe there are such viruses, but you have to transport them directly to the host, and then it may damage. So those people in the laboratory, they are at risk, and the very close people. But it's not a virus for a pandemic, because if you have a good virus for a pandemic, it has to go with every airplane and the people feel well and they spread the virus. This is a completely different construction. So I don't think that, and there's another thing. You know, the virus in Wuhan was sequenced, and Montagnier C, he also sequenced the virus, and he found this HIV sequence there. And this virus from Wuhan is no longer be found nowhere in the world. So there are about 4,000 mutations since then, since Wuhan. The virus is rapidly mutating. And so I think this is a normal development, what we observe. And so I'm not afraid of the virus. And what we see epidemiologically, see, it is not a dangerous virus. But there may be some cases where the virus does damage. But this is not more than we have seen in with other viruses we know. So I'm not afraid of a virus which was constructed as a biological weapon. But I'm afraid of the vaccine. The vaccine really
there is... There we agree. I'll discuss with you why I think you should be afraid of the virus, but we agree on the vaccine. Go ahead.
Yeah. So because the virus, the vaccine is something we don't know exactly how it works. And I just explained it in German before you started. We had this topic already, so I don't want to explain it again. But there are lots of facts that tell us that the virus, as it normally appears, the coronavirus is, and SARS is a coronavirus. It is there for 20 years. And this new coronavirus, the Wuhan virus, we have antibodies which are from 2019, and it was found that the virus did not start in Wuhan. As if you see the...
Excuse me, you mean SARS, the original SARS?
Yes, and the SARS type.
Right, that we the have first SARS-1, that leaked out of other Chinese biological warfare weapons factories.
It has spread all over the world in the meantime. And the varieties derived from that virus. But the virus now from Wuhan, the new one, is recognized by the immune system as one of the SARS viruses and is managed as well as all the other SARS viruses by our immune system because we have a cross immunity. And the cross immunity is so strong that it doesn't pay attention to single molecules. But the cross immunity just succeeds to keep away all kind of coronaviruses in more than 80% of the population, because we have a cross immunity in more than 80% of the population. Only 20% of the population, they feel something, they have such a virus update, and there is a certain reaction. And less than 0.5% of the population get seriously ill with fever. And still less die. So it's no more dangerous than the influenza virus. This is what we know, observing the new virus more than 1 year.
All right, well, doctor, let me respond this. First, on your first point, the purpose of a biological weapon, of course, is not to kill everyone. Rather, it's basically to discombobulate a society. And that's what COVID-19 has done. It has discombobulated the entire world. The delivery system, as I said in my presentation, was aerosolization. Wuhan BSL-4 bragged that they had aerosolized viruses. That is why in BSL-4s, they wear moon suits and they have their own portable air. It's so dangerous. They have to take those precautions. Now, as for the dangers here, I do have a book, and we start out with SARS. Okay, this is SARS on steroids, gain of function properties, HIV right in there, but they start out with SARS, indeed. If you read the article here that I mentioned, you'll see that Madame G, the bat queen, took a synthetic SARS virus from Wuhan BSL-4, China's Fort Detrick, and brought it over to the University of North Carolina. That was a BSL-3, where they gave it the gain of function properties. Now, I have here a book by a professor of biology at Columbia University. This book was printed before COVID-19, but after the SARS. Here's what he says about SARS. The overall death rate of SARS patients is 14 to 15%. Now, at the outbreak of the COVID-19 in Wuhan, they were reporting 17% lethality. 17%. Lancet said 15%. So I think based on this study by, on the original SARS that leaked out of other Chinese biological warfare factories, the overall death rate of SARS patients is 14 to 15%. The rate is less than 1% in people 24 years old or younger. Well, we found out that just isn't true now for COVID-19. 6% in people 25 to 44, 15% in 45 to 64, 50% in people 65 years or older. Well, that's for SARS. This is SARS-2. This is SARS on steroids. So I respectfully disagree with the doctor. I think this is far more serious than SARS. And indeed, the New York Times itself, which is the paper of public record here in the United States, has twice reported from different sources that at the height of the pandemic, in COVID-19 pandemic in Wuhan, the lethality rate was 17%. Mm-hmm. Now, it isn't in Germany, it isn't the United States. You know, we have, advanced medical facilities and this, that, the other thing. We've had lockdowns or whatever. So with all due respect to the doctor, I think it's far more dangerous than is being portrayed.
Okay. I think
17%, certainly what I originally said, it would be at least as dangerous as SARS, 15%. Mm-hmm. So 15, 17% lethality rate. But of course, we've been able to bring it under control.
I have one question. Why do you think SARS suddenly, if you think SARS was so dangerous, why? I was observing it very closely, and I was in the Chinese embassy and discussing with them. Why do you think it suddenly stopped? Because SARS went on crossing all over the world with all airplanes. It's everywhere. Why do you think suddenly it was no longer lethal?
Well, I think the doctors brought that under control. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Without doctor, it's you get infection and you don't really. It's just a cold. It's just like a flu.
Maybe that will happen with COVID-19. I don't know. But right now, the best figure I have from a year ago, in Wuhan, China itself, is 17%. Mm-hmm. And that's two different sources from the New York Times.
Okay, that's all right.
What happens with COVID-19? I think it'll be worse, doctor. Between you and me, that's my good faith assessment. But in any event, you can read this book, "Agents of Bioterrorism." Hang on, let me get you the date. Professor Zubai at Columbia, professor of biology there, 2005. So that was his final assessment of the lethality of SARS, 14 to 15%. The reports on this at the height of the pandemic was completely out of control, was 17%. We've had lockdowns, we've had masks, social distancing, so it's not that bad.
Lass uns das gleich bitte noch mal diskutieren. Professor Boyle, we get the message. And we're going to have to read up on this because we have to take a closer look at the materials that you sent us. In it, but and we will look at the figures, we will look at all the evidence. It is certainly quite catastrophic news that you're bringing us, and we all agree as far as the not studied so-called vaccines, the mRNA injections, are concerned. We're not so sure about the lethality or mortality of the actual virus, but that has to do with the fact that we haven't fully read up on what you sent us. But we will take a much closer look at it. And I'm really grateful for your time and for your patience explaining what you learned through a lifetime, basically, of taking a closer look at biological warfare experiments.
Well, thank you. I'm just appearing here. You know, I'm not here to shock anyone. I'm here to tell the German people the truth as I see it, based on opposing U.S. government biological warfare program since 1983. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid this is what we are dealing with. I'm also afraid that the German people are not being told the truth by your own government, with all due respect to
we know that
Chancellor Merkel.
We agree.
And your own news media.
Yeah.
I don't believe you're being told the truth. And that's why I'm appearing here today. And that's why I've taken this time to give you my best analysis of the situation.
Well, Professor Boyle, thank you very much. We do agree with you 100%, even as far as the government is concerned. We know that our government isn't telling us the truth. None of the governments throughout the world is doing that currently, with few exceptions, maybe Tanzania, maybe one of those states. And we also know that the mainstream media, of course, are lying to us because they're just a propaganda tool for the government. But again, thank you very much. Even though it's quite discouraging, thank you very much for the time and your energy in educating us on this.
Well, thank you, my best, to all the German people over there who listen to what I had to say.
Lots of them are listening. Thank you very much, and have a great weekend.
I will. Thank you. Okay. Happy to do this. Thank you.
Thank you very much.